much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took.
Good morning, 8:09 here on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. I'm Andrew McKay, and we're coming up upon the 200th anniversary of Escambia County, and every week there is an article in the Pensacola News Journal by a local archaeologist or historian. This week, the title of the article, Shift from Spanish to American Rule, Open Doors for Pensacola Businesses, co-written by Virginia Shelby, who is a family researcher and past president of the West Florida Genealogical Society. And our guest, Margot Stringfield, you've heard her before, is an archaeologist at the UWF Archaeology Institute. Margot, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Hey, great to have you. So it's so fascinating to think back about what Pensacola looked like 200 years ago. And one of the things that came through in your article was that it was a very mixed, diverse, integrated, even each block, you know, there was a lot of mixing among classes and races and occupations, right?
Yes, there really was. You did not see any neighborhoods that were exclusive to one ethnicity or even to one economic group. So it was a very relaxed neighborhood situation. And in these neighborhoods, you also saw the reflection of occupations that people had. So you could have a big merchant right down the street from someone who was a shoemaker. And it is a really nice dynamic to look at right as we began to transition.
You know, it's interesting going around Pensacola today, as most American cities, I think, today, it's very easy to see what demographic you're in. You know, you can tell that you're in a poor neighborhood. You can tell that you're in an affluent neighborhood. You can often tell that you're in a white neighborhood or a Hispanic neighborhood or a black neighborhood. And it wasn't really like that back then. Is that right? It's just much more, everybody was all mixed in together, languages, occupations, all of that.
It would appear to be so that Spanish, everyone did speak Spanish. You had French mixed in. And then when you had the Americans come, all of a sudden you had a real need for people to be able to understand each other. And so it's fascinating to look at how people are advertising their services as translators and just to be able to help people do business and to live their lives in a way that they can all understand each other.
You know, I never really thought about it that way, but if you've got all these different governments, and obviously they brought with them their language, so at the very least, you would have had Spanish, French, and English. And I suppose, you know, for a time, and we take it for granted now that everybody speaks English here, of course, but there must have been a time, especially in the beginning of the American period, where it was kind of like, well, what language is it today? And how long will it be this language? So was it just a multilingual culture and you didn't know for sure? And, you know, people would have to be translators. And I saw lawyers a lot in your article as well. Is that was a service that people provided?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They did, and of course you see many people that were that came as attorneys. I mean, these were highly educated people, and so in many cases they received a classical education. So they did speak more than one language, and the Spanish they would have understood the French language and would have been able to converse in that, and the French certainly would have been able to converse in Spanish. And so with the Americans, you're coming into kind of an unknown area. This is not like moving from, let's say, Pennsylvania to New York. This is a big leap to come into Spanish Florida.
I'm always fascinated by trying to get my mind around what did it look like back then. And, you know, you talked in your article about bringing in like entertainment and bringing in a circus from Cuba, and some of the volume of things that got imported are kind of amazing when you look at it, right?
Well, they are. And I think people were looking at opportunity. And so here we had an opening up of an area that had previously been closed off primarily to Americans. And so all of a sudden, you know, it was the next step west. It was the next step beyond. And so people flooded here looking for opportunity and looking for ways to better their situation in life. And for the Spanish that were already here, and the French, for the free people of color, for enslaved people, this was, you know, this was a quiet, more of a quiet hammock than it was a bustling city. But with the arrival of the Americans, you saw a real ramping up of what was going on, not only in commerce, but in almost every area of community life.
And I know one of the things that you had kind of mentioned to me, just to kind of put in perspective how things changed and how quickly it grew and what was available, there was an import list that had a very sizable amount of bacon. Is that right?
Oh, yes. This is certainly one of my favorite ads in the paper. You had commission merchants who would broker goods that were coming into Pensacola from the Northeast. And one ad in the paper noted that they had 5,000 pounds of bacon. And this sounds like an enormous amount of
yes.
bacon. But when you break it down, think how much bacon we actually eat in our life
right.
during the course of a year. And so you're seeing things like huge amounts of building supplies, lumber, nails. You're seeing paint. You're seeing bacon. You're seeing rye whiskey come in by the barrel load, fine rye whiskey. You're seeing goods that cater to people that were coming in here from the Northeast. You're seeing a lot of cod, salted cod come in, and other fish that are not local to our waters. And so you're seeing people arrive, and then they're sending for the things that they're used to.
I love
it.
They
might not be so used to what was going on here, but they were making sure that they had what they were used to, and they got it to themselves, including a lot of bacon.
I love that bacon. And that's, to me, it's reassuring that we've been eating bacon and fish and drinking and carousing as long as there's been a Pensacola, and I love that. Margo Stringfield, she is an archaeologist at the University of West Florida Archaeology Institute. She co-wrote the article from this week with Virginia Shelby. Margo, thank you so much for the time. Thanks again for bringing history alive for us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.